This is Jack Vaughn for SearchSOA.com. Today we'll be speaking with the author of Mashup Patterns. Michael Augrantz is the author of Mashup Patterns, Designs and Examples for the Modern Enterprise, published just this year, 2009, by Addison Wesley. He's a principal architect for a large financial institution and has a very interesting book. We're glad to be speaking with him today.
So, Mike, what brought you to interest in mashups?
Well, I have to say, initially, it was very accidental. I was working at the office, and someone asked me to attend a presentation that a vendor was giving, and I think they were just even entertaining the vendor's visit as a friend. And frankly, I went there and saw this mashup tool, saw this company combining data from different websites, and it wasn't really applicable to exactly the work that I was doing. And you know, and I asked them, well, how much is this tool? And they said something like it was $100,000 or something, but it's free. It was free for developers. And I said, well, you should just give this to us for free because we are never, ever going to use this. This is just too crazy. I mean, letting end users build their own applications potentially or grabbing data from these disparate sources, it all just seemed a little bit, you know, against maybe some of the best practices that I'd learned in my career over the past few decades.
Yeah.
But what happened was, so they kind of left maybe a little bit crestfallen, but a couple of weeks went by, and you know, that those sort of capabilities that they demonstrated were kind of just waiting there in the back of my head. And you know, there were a couple of problems that suddenly showed up, and someone had said to me, like, is this something that you guys could maybe, how would you guys go about fixing this? And it dawned on me that we could use some of these mashup tools that we'd seen could actually address some of these problems. And these were kind of like business-specific problems, but things that we'd really always previously thought of as these were problems that were, like, very expensive to fix or very complicated, or we didn't know the technical approach. And all of a sudden, when I realized that there was a new set of tools that could address these unmet problems, then I started seeing potential for mashups everywhere. All these things over the years that I thought, you know, there's no way to extend an existing system without the original developers involved. You know, there's no way to, maybe that's like, you know, add an RSS feed to a system unless you have the source code for it. There's no way to change its interface. You know, there's no way to fix a bug in a system unless you have access to the original developer. I mean, all these things just kind of like, you know, the floodgates were opened. That was really the start of a much more sort of wholesale interest.
Okay. And then I'm wondering, this is a question I'm still asking everybody. What's the difference between a portal and a mashup?
Okay, well, a portal, generally, if we think about, you know, portals, even if it's something like iGoogle that people go to in the consumer space, or if it's something like, you know, BEA or IBM's offering in the enterprise space, generally somewhere, somebody or some group of people is deciding what you get to see on that portal. And portals can be functional. I mean, a lot of times they're concerned more with information delivery. They don't have little embedded applications, but we do see, you know, widgets and things running on a portal. But ultimately, you're customizing or you're receiving content or functionality that someone else chose for you. And with a mashup, ideally what we see is a lot of times, whether it's IT or power users, outside of IT, people are crafting their own solutions. Now, those solutions that these other parties build can ultimately wind up inside of a portal, and that's where they could be served and consumed from. But ultimately, these are very personal sometimes solutions to the problems that are being built. And they're being built because IT or the people maybe who manage the portal can't meet all the user demand that's out there. So portals generally maybe deliver, if we take the sort of apply the long tail theory to a portal, maybe a portal delivers the 20% of content that's common to 80% of the users in an organization. Well, that leaves a lot of unfulfilled expectations and unmet demand out there. And so that's where mashups kind of come in and let people situationally create solutions for the problems that are very specific interest to them.
Okay. And the book Mashup Patterns, the approach you took was to discover, uncover, explore the world of mashups, but with an eye towards patterns, which is, you know, a way of looking at software development.
Right. And look at the technology technology behind mashups and to sort of see all the different situations or use cases, to extrapolate from them the generic, I think there's 34 in the book, but the generic solutions that mashups could bring to a wide set of problems. And, you know, in a traditional patterns book, if people think to like the classic Gang of Four book or a core J2E patterns, usually the patterns are accompanied by code to implement them. In this state that we're in the market right now, unfortunately, we're only just now sort of starting to see vendors move towards maybe some kind of a lingua franca for mashups. I wish it were possible to say, you know, here's how you implement, say, the usability enhancer pattern, or here's how you implement the portal enabler pattern. Instead, what I've done as an alternative is to try and give people non-technical, more business-focused examples of where the patterns could provide value. I think that's necessary because the technical state of mashups and the tools, I mean, the tools are very mature right now, but they're also very proprietary to specific vendors. But I also think, given the where people are, you know, where the economy is now, people want to understand what's the return on investment for any technology that I adopt.
When one does move from pattern to implementation, is it a deal where they're working with JavaScript and Ajax frameworks to a large degree?
Some of the tools rely on JavaScript, but actually it's all very proprietary. I mean, in some cases you're getting from one vendor, you're getting essentially, you know, almost a miniature app server where the mashup is built and hosted and delivered. So you can imagine that it's a much heavier stack. In some cases, there are some tools, I mean, there are open source products for doing web scripting within a browser, and you could actually theoretically implement some lightweight mashups that way. And so those are extremely lightweight, and you know, those mentions those leverage the technologies that you mentioned, but it really varies, and that's a benefit and perhaps a potential downside of the technology right now. I mean, the benefit of it is that organizations, no matter what their budget and IT infrastructure, can probably find a mashup product that will sit well in their environment. But the downside is also potentially that, you know, everyone is always wary of vendor lock-in, and I would like to see a point where, you know, and I think we're headed in this direction where the mashup's built in one environment, if not seamlessly, then with, you know, not as much pain can be moved from one technology to another.
And does the app server, the mini app server, does that provide like data staging and so forth? Because one thing that comes across in your book is that you are looking to collect from quite a variety of data sources.
Ideally, the data sits, the patterns in the book are broken down into a bunch of categories, such as harvesting, which is getting the data from different systems, or enhancing different systems, and there's some patterns for testing and for managing multiple systems. Most of the times, one of the things you'll find with mashups is that, regardless of how they're built, mashups generally leave the data or the presentation, a large part of that is borrowed from the originating system. So I shouldn't say borrowed, it's actually retained in the original system. So mashups aren't like an EII or an EAI tool where you're moving the data from one place to another. Although there are vendors who will tell you, you know, we can build a data migration mashup. The mashup itself does not, it's a vehicle, it's a mechanism. It doesn't actually retain any of the data. And then there are also folks who would, like Anthony Bradley from Garner comes to mind. He feels very strongly that if a mashup doesn't have a visual component, it's not really a mashup. So we've had some discussion back and forth on that. But generally, the data stays where it originated. And what that allows you to do is extend the system with a mashup, but not hopefully interfere with the governance and security and all the other management mechanisms that are around that data in the first place.
I kind of took an impression away from the book that data mining was the low-hanging fruit or the killer app, or whatever you want to call it, whatever I want to call it. I don't want to put words in your mouth. It seemed as though, you know, a lot of the mashups patterns that you were discussing did kind of relate to data mining. Is that a reasonable impression on my part, or how does it relate to the overall picture?
I think that, I think that's a very accurate impression, and a lot of the patterns rely on one particular pattern called API Enabler, which is basically designed to illustrate how if the data source doesn't already expose an API, there's a way for you to impose your own API on that data to get to it. And I think, you know, what you mentioned goes back to sort of the crux of how mashups began and what their continued value is in both the consumer and the enterprise space. There was this guy, Paul Rademacher, who's now at Google, but at the time, years ago, he was just apartment hunting, and he would look up an apartment listing in Craigslist, and then he would type it into Google Maps, and he would see where it was, and he thought, you know, oh, there has to be a better way. So he wrote, this is before there were any easy-to-use tools, so he wrote a quick parser, I think, in Perl against Craigslist, and he kind of reverse-engineered the Google Maps API before they had publicized it. And so, yeah, he was getting the data from Craigslist and putting it on a Google Map. And what we see now in some of the most popular consumer mashups, it's always something on a Google Map. It's cheap gas near me. It's crime rates near me or good restaurants near me. The data is out there. People are just looking for a way to put it in context or make it more relevant to them. And most relevant to some people sometimes is geographic location. But within an enterprise, you know, we have the same issue where sometimes it's very difficult to get information out of one particular system. You know, you have to go to a group, you have to get developers, you have to negotiate, you know, what the contract is going to be or the service level agreement between the teams. And yeah, sometimes the biggest impediment to solving a problem is getting the data you need to solve that problem, be it internally or externally. So yeah, a lot of the patterns start with how do I get to the data that I need to solve it. And as you mentioned, that's data mining or data harvesting is at the crux of that issue.
And so then within an organization, it may not be so much about doing something with the maps, but to data mine, if you will, your own information within your own organization.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was just talking to a vendor on the phone earlier today, and they had an application, and they were demonstrating how you could use mashups to take that basic web application, and without needing the original developers, you could basically transform that into something that was accessible via an Apple iPhone. So what a powerful case study that is to show someone, look, you know, you have these resources internally, now you want to, let's say, give them to a mobile sales force. How do you do that in the past? Well, you have to get the original developers involved, you have to spin up a project plan, you know, you have to allocate time and resources and budget. Maybe those original developers are gone, or maybe it was internally customized, let's say, a vendor product. I mean, to be able now to take different developers with no knowledge of the underlying source code and being able to give them tools and say, here, you can now take this internal resource and you can push it out to an entirely new platform. I think that's a really powerful example for with inside the enterprise.
Okay, Michael, we're just trying to give people a picture of your thinking and some of what you learned as you compose mashup patterns, designs, and examples for the modern enterprise. And thanks for talking with me.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.